It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282. And let's talk legal.
And let's do that. Let's continue the conversation with Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning.
And Wes Collins. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
We've been talking for the last couple of weeks about spousal issues. And
we have.
I think we can.
Spousal issues as they relate to, you know, estates, you know, death and dying. I'm sorry to put it in that way, but issues that relate in those formats. Let's begin with, there's just so many issues that relate to, you know, the relationship between folks who are married. Lots and lots of advantages legally. For instance, you're the preference to be the guardian for an individual absent a written power of attorney. You are the preference to be the administrator of an estate absent a written last will and testament that appoints someone else. You have a right, as we've discussed so many times in this program, you have a right to elect a share against the estate of your spouse. They can leave you out of their will all they want to, but guess what? You and or your representative, meaning your children through a power of attorney or otherwise, have the right to elect a share. And that elective share and the percentage of that is based on the number of years that you've been married. You as a spouse have the right to the first $60,000 of liquid and or personal, which really should be said personal property.
Yeah.
That can be an automobile, you know, the boat, the trailer. It can also be bank accounts and monies, but a spouse under the year's allowance has the right to the first $60,000 to the exclusion of any creditor, to the exclusion of anyone, really.
Yeah.
So we're beginning to see there's just a laundry list of spousal rights that we need to analyze when we have a client in our office. One of the things that we talked about last week is, you know, well, my spouse died or something might happen to my spouse. And, you know, they have a lot of consumer debt. They have credit card debt. I'm not on that debt. Okay. Am I going to be held responsible for that? Am I responsible for their, you know, their student loans? Am I responsible for their car payment? All of those kinds of things many times come up in an estate. And we have to guide the spouse through that, because the bottom line is that just because you are the spouse does not mean that you are personally responsible for the debts of the decedent.
You know, and we had a caller last week from Betty asking that same question. I think it as it referred to student debt on his spouse that was under her name. And, you know, we get listeners, new listeners to this show frequently. And maybe in 30 seconds or a minute, you could just quickly explain that as
okay,
far
Wes.
As the debt, sure. Wes, about a debt being held by a former deceased spouse that is strictly in that person's name. Is the survivors on the hook for that money?
No.
Yeah.
How's that?
That's a great answer, counselor.
So, yeah, I mean, normally you give me 30 seconds.
Well, you
so
can know,
no,
you,
I go a lot longer. So, yeah. Hey, mark me up for a 1 second response there. So,
Cecil yielded his time to you.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Right. So, you know, the way that works is that, as we discussed last week, you know, no matter what kind of obligation it is, you have to make a determination as to whether it's a single obligation or whether it's a joint obligation. Whether the surviving spouse signed a guarantee, you know, sometimes if you're talking about a bank loan, it could be a personal loan of some sort. I mean, there may be a requirement for a personal guarantee to be signed, meaning in the event that the borrower doesn't pay, then this guarantor has to pay, that kind of thing. So you have to look at that. And once the conclusion is reached, that it's just the individual's debt. Like in many cases, credit cards. That's kind of what you asked about. Then, you know, you're normally not going to have personal guarantees on there. That's going to be just the personal debt of the individual who has the card, even though you may have authorized users. You may have your spouse with their card with their name on it that says Susie Q can use the the card,
sure.
But that doesn't mean that she's necessarily liable for it, and she won't be liable for it if it is set up under the individual social security number and it's just an individual debt. So, you know, that's the way that works. So in the event that the person passes away who is the actual debtor, the person who made application for the credit card, since that's what we're talking about, and there's debt, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000, we've seen higher than that, you know, credit card debt, consumer debt, Home Depot debt, Belk's debt, Lowe's debt, you know, MasterCard debt, whatever.
Credit debt,
debt, debt. So that obligation, as far as the debt goes, that doesn't, that it, there's no responsibility of the surviving spouse to pay that debt, to be responsible for. It doesn't pour over. The account statements don't all of a sudden, the name doesn't change to Susie Q and it starts going to Susie Q and she's responsible. Now, I would tell you this, that when someone passes away and they have a there's a credit card debt, there may be an attempt, by the creditor to try to get the spouse to continue to make payments.
Sure.
But there's a difference between an attempt, phone calls, so on and so forth, and then a legal obligation to actually pay it. So that's kind of where the, as I say quite often, the rubber hits the road, where good advice from an attorney is going to, you know, keep a lot of money in your pocket under those certain circumstances. Now, I would say, however, as well, that the debtor passes away in the event that the debtor has assets to cover that debt, then some of those assets may be available to cover the debt. But let's say, for example, you know, there's $50,000 of debt, and that's what we've got, and there's $40,000 of money in the bank, and that's what the debtor had. And the debtor was married. Well, not one dime of that credit card debt is going to get paid as long as the estate administration is handled properly. Why is that? Because we have a $60,000 allowance that's going to come right off the top. It's going to go to the spouse. It's going to sponge that $40,000 right over to the spouse, and the credit card company is just going to be left holding the bag on that.
Exactly.
So we see all kind of variations of that, you know, situations where there's debt. Some of it has to get paid. Some of it doesn't have to get paid. As we say quite often, you know, is you're putting the round pegs in the round holes and the square pegs in the square holes. I don't think I ever said that before I started practicing down here with Cecil. I think I've been saying it 20 years now. He's been saying it like his whole life.
Exactly.
But that really is a lot of what we do, because it's just using the law to help the client instead of just kind of aimlessly walking along and bouncing from one place to the next. No, let's put you in the best place possible, because we know how the law works.
And I bet you there's a lot of people listening. If they've listened to this show, they know better now, but their spouse died, they had debt, and the credit card companies aren't going to say, hey, you don't have to pay this because it's in her name.
No.
And they start stroking the check and paying off the debt. When if they had good legal counsel, if they had talked to folks at Harvell and Collins, you know, or whomever their attorney is.
The credit card company is under no obligation to say, you don't owe this.
Right.
And they're not going to do that.
No.
No, they're going to seek recovery from wherever they can.
And people may feel the obligation to, you know, settle up the debt when by law they don't have to.
It's not a legal obligation.
Yeah,
right?
All the more reason to have a legal coach alongside you as you're moving through this thing called life.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
It's a good place to remind our listeners, Michael, that you know, when you do not have a will, last will and testament in the state of North Carolina, all of your assets do not just automatically pass to your spouse. This is a very common misunderstanding. This is a very dangerous area for those of you out there that are married that do not have a will and who just believe, for whatever reason, that all of your assets are going to pass to your spouse. If they're jointly titled, well, yeah, they're going to go to your spouse. If the bank account is joint, if the property is joint, then they're going to go to your spouse. But there are a lot of folks out there who have property that sometimes it's either just in their name, or they aren't absolutely sure about their title, the nature of their title. You know, folks come in all the time and we will ask them, you know, do you own that land and those homes, you know, in your name or is your wife's name? Well, I'm not real sure. We better check that. And usually that's a result of the fact that maybe they inherited the property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or they bought the property before they got married. Or they added on to property in some reason and the lawyer just did not add the spouse to it because the other spouse was kind of handling that transaction. There's all sorts of reasons as to why things might not be jointly titled. And one of the very important things that we do when we're reviewing these files with our client, Michael, and I ask all of our listeners to do this on their own, is to check your titles. And I don't mean like car, check your car title too, mm-hmm. but just check the registration of your accounts, your beneficiary designations. I mean, you know, we have so many files where, you know, the life insurance doesn't have a beneficiary or the IRA, the 401k, or there's confusion about it, or the beneficiary died, whatever the case mm-hmm. might be. Mm-hmm. They're no longer living and it was never updated. Wes is in these cases all the time wherein they're having to, you know, litigate potentially because of, you know, confusion over beneficiary designation. So, you know, we all need to take the time to check the title to our home. How is it registered? Is it joint with our spouse? Check the title to your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Check the titles to your bank accounts, the registrations. Are they joint? If they are, this very popular method right now, POD, payable on death, time on death, you know, that can be dangerous as well. Because is that really what you intend for your entire bank account, $100,000 in the bank, mm-hmm. to go to the one child? And by the way, what you're thinking is the reason I added my child to that account is because I want her to be able to pay my bills. Well, she doesn't need to be on your account to pay your bills. She needs to have a power of attorney over the account.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to have authority to get to the account to pay your bills, but she doesn't have to be registered on the account, okay? Because if she's registered on the account, then that $100,000 goes exclusively to that one child and is not divided two ways or three ways or however your last will and testament occurs. So check the registration and beneficiary designations, annuities, IRAs, life insurance, see that they're up to date. One more thing, and then I will kind of hush here a minute. The devil is in the contingency, the second beneficiary. We all know that many times we're appointing each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I see just constantly where there's then confusion about who the contingent beneficiary is if the spouse is not living. Now who do I appoint? And that's where you probably need to review that with your lawyer. Does that make sense, Michael?
Yeah, you put out a lot. You put out a lot of information just in that last 5 minutes there, and my wheels are turning as far as all what we have jointly held together, and some things that aren't, like automobiles. So we'll have to talk about that more. Good point to take a break right here. If you'd like to reach Harvell and Collins after the show, call 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with our friends from Harvell and Collins, and we've been talking about elective shares. And, you know, Wes, you've been doing this for more than two decades now. You're getting up there. You're catching up to Cecil.
Yeah.
What are some of the top mistakes that you see couples making, married couples making these mistakes before they sit down with you, and you have to kind of make it, put those round pegs back into the round holes?
Right. So, you know, the things that I deal with, being the guy who litigates issues, you know, a lot of times the problems come up after someone's died.
Mm-hmm.
and it's something that's in place that is not what anyone thought would have been in place. This could be, it normally doesn't happen, Mike, in situations where you've got the long-term lifetime marriage and the two kids and yeah. the standard situation. But when there's a divorce, when there's kids from a previous marriage, mm-hmm. when we start, you know, when there are those twists and turns in life, which obviously, you know, a lot of people go through that.
Happens
That's
a lot.
Just the way it is.
Sure.
The ball gets dropped in many cases. You know, for example, you know, I've dealt with lots and lots of cases over the years where there's just a mistake, for example, in a in failing to change beneficiary designations in life insurance, mm-hmm. In your federal government employee life insurance, the FEGLI, or in your retirement benefits through NADEP or whatever it may be, where for some reason the husband and the wife, they go to court, they get divorced, papers get signed, and they think that covers everything. Well, it doesn't cover everything. You've also got to go out and you have to change your beneficiary designations.
Mm-hmm.
Cases where you've got your spouse that you were divorced from 15 years ago, you pass away, she receives your life insurance benefits, those kind of things. Situations where you have even potentially a separation agreement, where the agreement maybe even references the life insurance policies or the, you know, the FEGLI, as I said, or mm-hmm. the retirement or whatever it may be. But there was nothing that was ever done to actually go to the administrator of the life insurance, the administrator of the insurance or the retirement, and actually just simply fill out a change of beneficiary form. So what happens under that circumstance? Well, if you've got a court order or you got a separation agreement that says that, you know, this policy goes to my kids or this policy is going to be given back to the owner who's a deceased and is going to be directed, you know, in some way. But then on the other hand, you've got the beneficiary designation still naming the ex-spouse. What happens? Well, guess what? They're going to pay it out as per the policy.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to pay it out, even that if that's not the intent and that's the clear intent. This the is clearly what is indicated on the beneficiary designation. So these issues get litigated sometimes. I mean, I've litigated lots of those issues. So I would tell folks to make sure you know how your beneficiary designations are set up. Know how your accounts are set up. Know how, when I say beneficiary designations, I'm talking about any life insurance, any retirement account, any kind of retirement through work. And, you know, some people just think, they think, well, I don't know if I've even got anything like that. I think that whatever I have out there just goes to my family. Well, people don't realize sometimes that when you sit down and you fill out your paperwork on day one of your new job,
yeah.
you know, whether it's, you know, military related or not, because I have mentioned, you know, NADEP here and I've mentioned FEGLI policies, so on and so forth, but any type of situation like that, that, you know, you're excited about your new job, you're filling out all the tax paperwork, you're filling out all this, these documents, you're filling out, you know, background information, whatever you're filling out. But in many cases, you fill out a document that indicates where you want any retirement that builds up to go.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put on that document back 30 years ago that it goes to my spouse and that's the way it is and that's built up and that spouse is no longer the spouse anymore, it's not that hard to change it. You just need to go, you know, to
HR.
I guess, AHR.
Sure.
You need to ask for your documents. You need to look at them. I'm kind of a perfect example with that right now. I just communicated with my life insurance agent. Hadn't communicated with her in 9 years probably. I want her to come sit down with me and we're going to look at all of my beneficiary designations. We're going to look at what life insurance I have. It's kind of that time.
Yeah.
Just sit down and make sure everything is perfect. And I'm, you know, in a lifelong, you know, committed marriage, two kids, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's not any
pretty
big changes that took place.
Yeah.
You know, in my life other than lost my mother several years ago, but not any big changes, but it's still. Let's just look at it. Make sure
Smart
everything
move.
Is perfect because, yeah. you know, when I pass away, my wife and my kids are going to have to deal with what I've got set up.
Yeah.
And that's what Cecil and I deal with all the time. We have to deal with whatever the deceased had set up. Some people have their house in order. Some people don't.
Yeah, others don't.
All right.
Probably a lot don't. Gentlemen, let's take a break here so we can come back and have a little bit of time in our final segment. If we would take a break here at 7:54, we'll come back with more Let's Talk Legal. And you can reach Harvell and Collins after the show. Call 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. We're back with Let's Talk Legal with our friends from Harvell and Collins, talking about a very deep topic here that affects probably most everybody listening, elective shares and spousal issues with our audience here. We've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks, and probably we'll dedicate some more time to this topic here, getting your paperwork, your affairs, your beneficiaries all in order, just like what you're doing, Wes.
Yeah, there needs to be review time with this, Michael, just like we all, are supposed to do with our medical health, our dental health. I mean, I'm sorry to put it in those terms, but I mean, people need to do what Wes was talking about, the fact that he was about to do. You need to review your legal affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the devil almost always seems to be in the contingencies. Just every single time, it seems, a lot of times when I'm meeting with clients, it's so frequent, the powers of attorney will say each other. Okay. But then the alternate is no longer living, or the alternate was their brother or sister when the children were age, 7 or 8 years old, and now their children are 25 or 30. Okay? Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's the alternate. It's the contingencies that folks just need to look at very carefully. And then that will, encourage them, motivate them to update those documents and get them, up to 2020. Also, the laws change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a huge, complete recodification of our durable power of attorney statute 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, very recent, completely revamped the entire statute from beginning to end. And these powers of attorney, durable powers of attorney, need to be updated occasionally.
So what you're saying, Cecil, is if you've done this, you think you got your affairs in order, but you did it maybe 10 years ago, the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
You said the statutes have been rewritten and changed, so it may be a time to do a little review and sit down with your attorney and look at that.
I mean, obviously, this being an election year, my goodness, right? I don't want to get into all that. But,
is it?
But, the ebb and the flow and the changes in the laws that relates to the tax laws, those kind of – I mean, we're hearing about things such as – maybe the estate tax is going to come back a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
That would take us back maybe 8 to 10 years in planning techniques to make sure that folks aren't overly taxed because they fail to plan. There's just a lot of moving targets in what we deal with. And, a important one, but a kind of easy one to deal with is that durable power of attorney that Cecil just mentioned.
Absolutely.
Healthcare power of attorney changed a couple of years ago as well. But, if there's some change of administration here this year, I'll leave my opinions about that to the side for today. But if there is, then obviously the laws may